The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
All right. And this is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
And this is episode 142 at our new studio.
Yes, which we have yet to finalize a name.
That's right. We're talking about either you going with the Linux layer,
well,
which
this
Mary came up
some,
with.
Some
which
suggestions
cool.
we have are the Linux layer from our own Mary.
BSD Blaster.
No.
All right.
And we have
the node.
The node.
That was from a listener.
The Southgate Studio.
Roderick was who suggested the node.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I
friend
like that.
Of the show Brian made two suggestions. He said LRS Linux Review Studio and Nix Kicks.
As in Star Nix.
I have
yeah.
no idea.
Yeah, Nix.
Right.
Linux
right.
or Unix, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
So good. Right. We got
so,
this is,
so what we want you to do as our loyal, fanatical fan base is to please send us your suggestions for names for the new studio.
That's right. And we'll set up a poll. After we get some more suggestions,
don't set up a poll on Google Plus because Tom, friend of the show Tom, will not respond. He hates those polls.
Oh, speaking of friend of the show Tom, he may not be following me anymore.
I saw that. You got to explain that was a joke.
I did. I sent him a 1-to-1.
Oh, okay. Thing.
It wasn't a joke, but I was trying to make a point.
I must have missed that.
He was trolling a friend.
Oh.
Another friend.
Okay. All right. Well, we're gonna get. All right. So anyway, well, let's. I think we've got a little bit of catching up to do as far as you know what we've been doing in the last few weeks. Maybe software open source related. Who wants to go first?
Software open source related or life related?
Well,
you guys can start, and then mine is life related. So.
So's mine. It's work related. Because well, work is my life.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, why don't you start, Matt?
Yesterday at work.
We need a lead-in for these stories. Yeah, go ahead.
No, we had this server that alerted. It didn't really alert, but the control panel stopped working. For like all the clients on the server couldn't access the control panel. And so I'm logged in. I'm trying to figure out why. Well, USR user is out of inodes. All the inodes are used in user.
Oh, wow.
So it can't write any files, and that's where it writes some temp files. So I discover that the inode usage, there's, you know, somewhere around 500,000 inodes available. About 500,500 inodes available on the partition, and 400,500 of them are being used in user local / this software.
Oh.
Okay, temp. So I start looking for the inodes in this thing. So I'm doing my searches inside the, it just says they're in the temp directory. So I ls it and I don't see anything. I see a few other directories and 2-3 files.
Mm.
So I'm like, what the heck is this? And all of the other directories there say they're only using one inode each, so there's not even any files in them.
Whoa.
So I can't find it.
What
I'm
a
looking.
Mystery.
I'm looking. It was boggling my mind. I got to the point where, because you're under pressure, because people's websites, they can't get to their control panel. Their sites are still loading, but they can't get to their control panel.
Yeah.
So I feel a little pressure here. You know. So finally, I pulled the Windows move. I hate to say it, but I did it. I said, because I couldn't find anything. I thought maybe LSoft would show me that a bunch of deleted files maybe were being held open by something. That wasn't the case. I restarted the service. It said, man, I can't restart.
So, oh, not good.
So I said, I'm at my wit's end. Reboot the server. So we rebooted the server, me and this other guy that were working on it.
And it fixed it.
No.
Oh!
So it came back up. Problem is still there.
Oh, my.
I just can't. So then it dawns on me. Hidden files. So I looked for hidden files. Damn, there they were. Over 400,000 of them. Jeez. All of them computeratically, programmatically named. The defaults, dot blah, 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 random letters. Mm-hmm. Wow. So I just, first, I tried to RM them. RM said, what are you talking about? That argument list is too long. So then I tried to LS the directory and pipe, with the specific file.
Mm-hmm.
And then, globbing afterwards so it would expand to it. And I tried to just, and I piped that to xargs
mm-hmm.
to RM so that the file list wouldn't be too long for RM. Well, the file list was too long for LS.
Oh. You know what? I ran into a similar problem.
So I did it with find. I did, and then I piped the find to xargs RM.
Yeah.
And fixed it.
Could you use regedit?
What?
I'm throwing that out there because you remember you were in the whole regedit. I thought I could maybe do something there.
I dropped into Windows mode when I rebooted the server.
Right.
Yeah,
I had to do something similar to that, except for I used find and RM, but I did sort by the oldest because I needed to delete the oldest spam that the person had, the oldest files. So I said, delete the oldest, 1,000 files, and then it would go through and delete so many, and then you could do that over and over again, 1,000, 2,000 files, or 400,000 files.
Yeah. If you pipe it to xargs, though, or was this on a Windows machine?
No, it was my hosting server.
Okay.
Linux.
Because what you could do is do that fine, then pipe it to xargs space RM, and because xargs, what xargs does is it finds the largest string that that program can handle and then sends it in chunks of the largest string.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's neat, because I was explaining to me that it just is used to execute, to pipe and execute in another program. I didn't know it would actually...
Yes.
It was smart like that. That's cool. Yes.
That's the only thing I've ever used it for, is when my file list is too long.
Yeah,
I throw xargs in there.
Nice.
I've been sitting within this conversation, just observing. I've never run out of inodes.
Happens.
But
most of the time, when it happens, it's in var, and it's because of a spammer and bounced emails.
Oh, okay, sure.
When I saw the user was out of inodes, I'm like, "What the heck is going on?"
I know I've mysteriously run out of space, and that was because of some. I think it was a hidden file, the X session errors or something like that.
It was just
logging to it, and because it's a hidden file, you don't see it right away.
Yeah, it's growing.
Well, and what's interesting about inodes is that it can say that you're out of space, but when you do how much space is left,
because that's how
DF
I was
to see how much space is in the drive.
Mm-hmm.
It'll say you have 2 gigs left or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not out of space.
I wasn't on shift when this happened. It was way after my shift was supposed to be over. I was there working on another problem. And in the chat, the guy that had discovered it said, "I don't know what's going on here. It says it's full, but it's only 41%." Right away, I knew inodes.
Yeah.
So I log into the server and I say it's inodes and it's in this directory, and that's when it all started.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting, Matt.
Yeah. I thought it fun. I thought it was great fun.
Well, I think when you're presented with a technical problem like that, and then you kind of proceed through the process to resolve it, and you do resolve it and figure it out. And
linear though. It was kind of
it isn't. Woo, woo, woo. Well, but I know. But those sometimes are the best ways to go. I mean, tends to be how I solve problems.
I got so mad at myself that I rebooted that server too.
Well, sometimes you just got to do it.
All right. So what did you do over the last month, Mary?
I retired.
Hey, congratulations.
I quit my job. I did. And so, I'm running my little hedge fund, and that's off to a good start. The other thing, too, is that I think in our last episode, We had talked, well, I think in a previous few episodes, we talked about System D. And what I had done after our last episode is I had sent off a, because there was some comment about the fact that there was some thinking that FreeBSD was going to be adopting System D or something like that because of some talk that Jordan Hubbard had given. And I contacted the BSD Now podcast with Alan Jude and Chris Moore to just say, hey, what, this is what I've heard. Is this the case? And they said, no, he had used the Launch D examples from Apple because, which is similar to System D,
right.
because he had worked at Apple for 12 years and that was just kind of the easiest frame of reference to use. But, in the most recent, podcast from BSD Now, this is the one that was released on Thursday. They interviewed a guy who is doing some work. He's doing some System D replacements for BSD because apparently in GNOME there are some hard-coded.
Yeah, GNOME has hard-coded dependencies. On System D.
Yes, and
really?
So
it's ridiculous.
There are, wow. I think
that's
there are
just
four
another
of them.
Reason not to use that horrible desktop.
Hostname D, locale D, time date D, I think, and login D. And so what this guy is doing is, and he's got three of them done, I guess. I guess login D is probably the hardest one to do. At least that's what they said. So he has gotten three of those done so that anybody who wants to use GNOME in FreeBSD will be able to do that without having to deal with those issues.
They should have said GNOME. Good knowing you. That's no, what they should
but
have
here's,
said.
Well, here's the interesting thing about it is that he was contacted. Now, he uses OpenBSD. But he's been contacted by some of the Linux folks who want to have that ported back to Linux, and he said he's open to doing that.
So they can run GNOME on systems without System D.
Exactly.
Like our friends over at Dev1.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So that I was kind of keeping up on that. I ended up buying Michael W. Lucas's book too, the hard copy version of it. I wanted that the
FreeBSD one.
Storage Mastery. Yes. I really like it, and the hard copy book rather than the ebook, the font, there's a delineation, more clear delineation between the computer entry types things and then the rest of the print book, which I didn't see in the ebook as much.
Really?
Well, but it might be because I was just reading it as a PDF or something. I don't know. It didn't translate as well, I really, really liked it.
I bought that book too. I have yet to read it.
Well, I read the ebook version because I reviewed it.
Yes.
But again, I'm going to go back and reread it because I thought it was pretty interesting. And the last thing I did, or I read this story. This came to me by way of Slashdot. You're familiar with Slashdot, of course.
I follow Rob Malda on Twitter.
Captain Taco, or what is it?
Yes, Commander Taco.
Commander Taco.
Commander Taco.
I think I accidentally demoted him. I'm very sorry. All right. But anyway, there was a story about... the scientist Glenn Seaborg, he was the first scientist to make plutonium. And he got a Nobel Prize in chemistry for it way back in the 50s. But anyway, and there was this blog posting about how they did it. And it took him about a year to make a macro size version, which was actually about, it was like 2.77 micrograms. It was still very tiny. And it got lost. It was there for a while, then it got lost. And then apparently it was eventually found by a three-headed janitor. No, just kidding. I made that part up. But it was...
Really? You made up the part about the three-headed janitor? I thought that was real.
The radiation. Yeah, no. But they did finally find it. But they... But how do you lose... How do you lose plutonium-239? How do you lose that? I mean, it's...
It was tiny.
Yeah, it
was small. Yeah, so anyway, what they're doing is they were able to confirm that it was his original one. They ran some non-destructive tests on it, I guess it was some kind of fingerprint.
Well, you know when it was made, mm-hmm. and you know what the half-life is, so all you have to do is really is weigh
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so they're now going to put it back on display in his old office at Berkeley, probably with a little radiation symbol somewhere nearby, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyway, the story kind of cracked me up just because...
Lost it. And we misplaced this chunk of plutonium.
Right. Well, how do we know it's actually in there? Because it's probably just going to be a canister
with
that
says little
plutonium's inside this.
Yeah.
Well, no, because it's so small, the radiation it gives off is... I mean, you would get more flying in an airplane across country, I'm sure.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
All right. All right. But anyway, so I saw that. Thought that was kind of funny.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. And mine?
Yeah.
I moved.
And that's why you didn't see our episode a couple of weeks ago, because Tony was knee-deep in moving.
Yes, that's right. I was in the middle of doing all that. It was a lot of work.
Horrible,
it's still
wasn't it?
Is. Right now, we're still in boxes right now. And
oh, not us, literally, but your household goods.
You can see some of the boxes right next to me here. You know, I had to like clear out all this area just so we can set up the studio.
Yeah,
and
so
this is
we
where my
appreciate
office
that.
Will be. Mm-hmm. And you'll see over the next, hopefully the next show or two, that everything will be set up correctly and all set. But the reason we didn't have the show last time is because, well, let's start back. We bought the house, and that night I started sanding the floors and refinishing the floors. And I thought, I have a week. It'll be no problem. I'll have everything mm-hmm. set.
Okay.
Well, there was Christmas in there, and my family's Christmas. And
expectations.
Right. So what happened was I put on my first coat of polyurethane. We stained cup polyurethane. And then Christmas Eve morning, I went to check on it, and it wasn't dried all the way yet. So I had to let it set.
Oh.
And then, you know, Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day. And I was getting nervous, so I came back Christmas night and put the second coat of polyurethane down.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came to, we got the third one on there, and then Saturday morning we started painting. I was here, and we painted four rooms also.
Mm-hmm.
So I was here at the new house until at 2 a.m. painting. I didn't get back to my... We're at the old house now, where we were still sleeping, and where the studio is set up.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get back there until about 3 a.m. And then to get up 3 hours later to do the show wasn't going to work. And then have to be all day here again today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I decided that we had to put off the
show.
We're
recording, aren't we?
You know, are we broadcasting? Because at 8:10, Popey wanted to know when the broadcast... I mean... 5150 wanted to know when the broadcast was going to start.
It should be started right now. Oh, NS.
All right. Well, Tony will work on that while we... I think what we'll probably do then is move on with our segments.
Yeah. So, Matt.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
Colonel News.
All right. The Colonel News. Mainline is 3.19-RC3. Released on 1.6. And the newest stable Colonel is 3.18.2, released on 1.8. And then we have Colonel 3.17.8, which is EOL. But they had a version released on 1.8. Then we have 3.14.28 long-term kernel released on 1.8. And then long-term kernel, I'm going to say this one. I don't remember. It's been so long. 3.12.35 released on 12.10 of 14. Long-term kernel 3.10.64. Released on 1.8. Long-term kernel. .6.32.65 released on 12.13. And 3.2.66 released on 1.1. So on New Year's Day, they released a kernel.
Those guys work hard.
For those of you running that 3.2.66 long-term kernel.
Yeah.
And that's all the kernels I have for you.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
All right.
And we're going to go on to...
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The Linux distributions. So it's been a month since we had the show. So I don't think I want to go all the way back. A month.
No.
What do you mean? I researched all of those.
I would just go to the bottom of the page.
Well, big things out. We talked about Fedora 21 last time in the last show.
Hey, but you know, speaking of Fedora, I got to mention this quick thing. I was at Barnes & Noble looking at the magazines yesterday, And there was this magazine in the computer section that said something about XP free or XP expired, or, you know, something about moving from XP.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what distro they had in the sleeve, the CD or the DVD sleeve? Fedora 20. Well, I'm thinking to myself, and I understand where you're coming from because, you know, it's a fine distro, but as far as a brand new user getting into Linux, I didn't think Fedora would be the way to go. I think Ubuntu would be a better way. All right.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Why?
Because I think...
Oh, because the user interface is so similar to Windows?
Okay, well, thank you for answering my question. All right, go on, Tony.
All right.
I see this is not going to end well. All right. Well, there was Calculate Linux that came out a while back.
Right. Yep.
And then...
why don't we just start with Raspbian, right at the bottom of the page.
I'm good with that. Yeah, because that's back day after Christmas on the 26th.
1224.
26.
1224.
All right. Well, I think we all have to start somewhere. I just have all this great research that, poof.
Hey, you're retired. Man. What do you have to do now, man?
That was a snappy comeback. I like that.
All right. So Raspbian on 1224 was actually, no, the version is 2014-1224. It was released or showed up on...
you are correct.
It showed up on DistroWatch on the 26th.
But they released it on 1224.
Probably, yeah. And again, they're Debian-based, just like the name sounds, Raspbian. So it's Raspberry Pi and Debian. And that's what I run on one of my Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, it was the original distro for Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it's very nice.
I mean, a few others now, but that's the granddaddy of them all.
Yeah.
The old gray beard.
The old gray beard. He ain't what he used to be. I'm looking at you, Matt.
I know. I see that.
I'm kidding you. All right. We're plunging on here.
All right. Next up we have is KaOS, which is the updated version of the Arch-inspired rolling release with KDE as a desktop.
Yeah. They're in the process of... putting together, or at least implementing, an installer framework that's modular based, and they said it. I guess it may be available, but it's not. They don't have a stable version yet, so it should be considered at beta stage, and so you can, I guess, use it at your own risk. And then they also mentioned too that for UEFI installs, it's not possible at this time to use the three automated partitioning options. Only the fourth one can be used. And if you want to use a GPT partition table on a BIOS system, they've got instructions for you to follow. So a few things there as they kind of make that transition.
Yeah.
Yes. And their new installer, the Qt5 Python 3 based installer, is actually a joint effort between several distributions.
Oh, yeah. I think Kubuntu is one of them, as it said there. So excellent.
Netrunner, them. And Manjaro is what it says here.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Next up on the 28th.
And Fedora.
Are we? Okay.
And are Fedora. You sure?
Yeah. Well, I went to the website and looked at it. I did the legwork here. Remember Barbecue Linux, where you could kind of make up all the, it was kind of crazy. Barbecue Linux also was contributing or is participating in that. So nice. That's kind of nice. It sounds like a very, they may have a standard installer.
All right. All right, next up on the 28th, we have OpenELEC 5.0, which is a, what do they call it? A release of distribution for design for media centers, now with Kodi 14 Media Center, which is the old XBMC. And it's built for Freescale, the IMX 6 devices. And I'm running OpenELEC on my other Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. And I like it very much. The cool thing about Raspberry Pi or OpenELEC is that they do kind of like firmware or direct installs for single-use devices.
Okay. And, you know, you're not running this version yet, though. You haven't upgraded yet.
No, I haven't.
A couple of changes they made is they did bump the kernel up. The new version now uses the 3.17 kernel, and they've switched from OpenSSL to LibreSSL after that whole Heartbleed disclosure.
Right.
So, anyway, but they also said, too, that, as you know, Tony, because you use it, they've got various skins and themes and that type of thing. They did have a little cautionary note that quite a few of them remain to be ported by the various developers who created them. So it's outside of these, you know, the project's control. So they'll either not work or maybe marked as broken. So you'll need to kind of keep an eye on that if you use those kinds of things and you want to upgrade.
Yeah, cool. All right, continuing on, we have Nix OS 14.12 that was released on New Year's Eve, 12/31. And what? They have a custom package manager?
Yeah, well, actually, the Nix package manager, they built kind of the OS on top of the package manager. Maybe that's how it's normally done, but I went out to their site and did a little reading on this thing. And it also, it's also used to, in addition to managing packages, it manages system configurations so that it's easy to roll back if, you decide that you want to roll back to a previous version. And they do the same thing that, PCBSD and others do as far as packages where it ends up in a directory. All of the dependencies are satisfied in that kind of that build and it sits there. So you can run multiple versions of the same package, in Nix OS. And, let's see here. Yeah. And also they, non-privileged users can install, securely install software. So, cause it's multi-user. But anyway, it's kind of interesting.
All right.
Interesting. I've been asked about, reviewing that OS and I haven't done it yet cause I think it would be a lot of work.
What, the Nix OS?
Yeah.
Why do you presume it to be a lot of work?
Well, because I think I really would have to dig into it to appropriately review it. In other words, the file system hierarchy is a little bit different. This approach as far as, although it's like, PCBSD that I'm using, it's similar to that as far as the, packages and how, when they get installed, they're kind of dropped into a location. In Nix, I think it's in, I want to say user local, but anyway, it's in a specific location. So, I just think it will require a lot of time, but now that I'm retired. Anyway, go on, Tony.
All right. So the last one for New Year's Eve was DeepN 2014.2. And, they are Ubuntu based and they said they have a custom HTML5 desktop. So that looks interesting. I've never seen or heard of somebody making a desktop environment with HTML5.
I don't know.
I mean,
it's kind of like a web OS. Yeah. I mean, a web style OS.
Right.
So what? They build a whole browser too, or you use the browser of your choice to run the desktop? I mean, how's that work?
It comes from China. I don't know if that means anything.
yeah, I guess I don't know. Okay. continuing on, we have on the first, we have Zeven OS 6.0, and that go desktop, blah, 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 version 6, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Ubuntu, LTS, XFCE. Sorry. Go ahead, Mary.
All I was going to say about Zeven OS is, I think they kind of mentioned it there on DistroWatch, is that they try to create that BEOS, BOS?
Yes.
Environment or that look.
Right. They want to be a BOS lookalike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's another distro associated with Zeven, and it's called Neptune. And I think Zeven OS is based on what, Ubuntu? But, Neptune is based on Debian Stable, although instead of the default kernel that comes with Debian Stable, they use a newer kernel and then some additional drivers. And plus, Neptune ships with KDE 4.14, so it's more of a KDE-centric version rather than what this one ships with.
All right.
All right.
All right, next up we have Android x86 4.4 R2. So this is the second release of the unofficial port of Google's Android mobile operating systems to run on Intel and AMD processors.
Remember, I think I talked about installing that. It just
did you install it? Because I've been
I did.
I've wanted to give it a run at
your desktop or laptop, whatever, looks like a big Android tablet, but you can't if you don't have touch sensitive screen. You got to use your mouse, but yeah, it installed fine, and it just looks kind of big and I don't
clunky.
Know. Well, a little bit, but I suspect it's gotten better because this was, I think, over a year ago that I tried it out just to see if I could get it installed, and yeah, it was not as difficult as I thought.
Yeah, all right. Next up we have is Sparky Linux 3.6 Game Over, and Sparky is designed for gamers.
I'm shocked. they got a new application. Actually, they got several. One of them, it's called Spark Apt US Gamer, and it's a tool that will let you install all available games and machine games emulators. Most of them are located in the Debian repos, and they've got Sparky Linux also has its own repository, and they'll pull it there too. So it's like kind of like a all-in-one situation where you can just pull those all down.
Nice.
One thing, too, about Sparky Linux, the requirements are fairly modest. 256 megs of RAM. They said, that's the minimum, but they recommend a little bit more than that. And then there's just 20 gigs for installation.
Cool.
And dust off those old computers and give it a try.
Right. All right, and next up we have is on the 4th, we have Xtix 15.1, and they are Ubuntu based with GNOME 3.14 as their desktop.
Yeah, and in addition to this version, they've got another version too that uses Razer QT. They call it Xtix Lite, or a lighter version of it. And they use the Slim Login Manager, and I'm not familiar with the Slim Login Manager. Have you guys heard of that?
Yes.
All right. I'll study on it. I'll study up on it. Anyway,
you asked if I'd heard of it.
I realized that. Yeah. After I asked that question, you respond. I thought, that's exactly correct. I deserve that. And then their ISO is a ISO hybrid, so you can easily put it on a pen drive if you want, or a thumb drive.
All right. So cool. All right, next we have, on the 6th, we have OpenWall GNU Star Linux 3.1. And they are a security-enhanced Linux distributions for servers, appliances, and virtual appliances. And I believe the code name for this one is The Owl.
Yeah, I think they haven't really come out with anything in a couple of years. And speaking of firewalls, I'm going to diverge just for a bit. Did you know that there's been a fork of pfSense?
I was going to mention that after the distributions were over. Thank you, Mary.
That's interesting.
All right, I'll let you talk about it.
Nope, I'm done.
I posted, is that, oh, okay. Okay. So, but they did pull in, as far as the core team goes, they pulled in somebody from the Dragonfly BSD project, one of the developers. So, okay.
All right. On the 8th, we have Linux Mint 17.1 KDE. And we talked about this in the last show that I upgraded to KDE, but I was running Cinnamon. Or not KDE, I'm sorry. I upgraded to 17.1.
I was going to say, this is an all KDE show. Yeah,
But it was the Cinnamon edition, not the KDE edition. So now the KDE is available.
Oh, okay. It's the poor stepchild in the Mint family.
It is, and it should be.
Do you hear that, Matt?
Are you busting on KDE?
I am.
You sucky Mint user.
Yeah.
You of the Mint desktop user.
Mate.
No. Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Oh, Cinnamon. That's
who
right.
uses a desktop that sounds like a spice?
That's right.
I do. It's awesome. And you know what?
All right.
Cinnamon is my favorite spice.
Oh, my God. All right. All right. We got one more Linux distro to cover.
Last one is BioLinux 8.0.5. And they are also Ubuntu-based with scientific software for field, or for the field of bioinformatics.
Yeah. And by the way, too, I went out to their site. They have hundreds of apps. A couple of them here is called Dendroscope. I just thought, what a great name. And this is an interactive viewer for large phylogenetic trees. Another one called Catch-All. Analyze data about microbial species abundance. And then they have one called FASTA, but I didn't see one called SLOA. FASTA is a collection of programs for searching DNA and protein databases. And then this one here I thought was just really cool, Galaxy Server. And that's a web-based analysis environment for bioinformatics. So there's just a few of the cool names of the programs that are on that distro.
Yeah.
So, and that's BioLinux.
Very cool.
So if you're into biology and bioinformatics, get it.
All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Right, and so the top five for this
last week.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So for the last 7 days on DistroWatch, and I figured this is the first show of the year, so we could probably make the disclaimer that this is just the DistroWatch page hits.
Correct.
Not necessarily
popularity.
Downloads, installs, overall popularity, just who's leading in the DistroWatch page hits. That doesn't mean the website's page. It means their page on DistroWatch.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a fun little thing that I like to go through and do, and really means nothing, but I think it's
and
fun.
It tells you who is number one in the Linux business.
That's right. Not really. All right. So at number five, we have Android x86 with 1184.
And trending down.
Number four is OpenSUSE with 1279.
And trending down.
Number three is Debian with 1484.
And trending down.
And number two is Ubuntu with 1565.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2833.
And trending up.
Yeah.
You know, I went back through some old SMLR episodes.
Oh.
And I thought it would be great to have a little segment called Matt's Old Quotes.
Oh, no.
Because I can recall, I want to say it was like episode, this is before I even joined, because as a matter of fact, this is like my third anniversary. I've been doing this 3 years now. But you guys started 2 months or 3 months before. I think you started in October 2012 or 11.
2 to 4 months before,
Like that. And I thought, I'm going to go back and listen to an old one. And there was one mad of you just raving about Debian. Debian-based distros.
I did. I loved it. And I used Debian and Debian, mostly Debian, or Debian derivatives like Seduction. Right up until I went to work for who I work for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they, cause also all the servers I installed for people that were my clients, I used Debian for all those servers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when I went to work for this company, they are CentOS based. So I said, well, gonna eat your own dog food.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I started running Fedora.
Yeah. It just cracked me up because you were just, it's your, what's that passionate, that passion you bring to everything?
But I never looked at Fedora because I'm like, it's a mainstream desktop. It runs old software.
No,
they're just as current as Seduction or SID and Debian. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was amazed. It was great.
Yeah.
So there we have it. But anyway, so it's fun to go back.
Because I did try. You'll never guess what desktop I tried first when I went, what distro I tried first.
Ubuntu?
Stella.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that discussion because I think Carl, friend of the show, Carl.
Carl runs Stella, yeah.
Yep. Oh. And then we morphed into Stella Artois or whatever the beer.
I don't know.
I don't know. Why does it always end up on beer? I don't understand that.
I don't know, but there's never enough of it. I'm saying that right now. I'm putting my...
All right. Matt, were you going to say anything more about the... About that open
OpenSense.
OpenSense.
Yeah. OPEN. No E.
There's no E in it.
If you put an E in it, you wind up at this some company, some German company that's just wacky. But anyway, it's OpenSense.
Yeah.
And the only thing I was going to talk about it was it's a company that forked it. You know that, right? It's not a spontaneous fork. It was a commercial company that actually forked it.
Oh, really? Well, you know, somebody from that team is going to be on BSD Now, the podcast, next week. They're going to be interviewed. So
yeah, because I'm sure they want people to start using this because because you can buy support from that company.
Mm-hmm.
So and being that it's mostly PFSense at this point.
Yeah.
Why not? I think that's an awesome way to use open source.
I think it's a great way to use open source.
Yeah.
But don't fork an established project.
Mm-hmm.
Learn that project. Sell support for that project. Promote that project. Don't fork that project.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. That's a good point because, I'll be interested to hear what they say about it.
They forked it was because the guys who make PFSense, they're also a commercial company, and they sell support for it. And so who are you going to buy support from, the guys that make PFSense or these other guys
that fork it?
The support PFSense. So that's why they forked it, so it's its own unique distribution.
Mm-hmm.
I say distribution, I realize that it's BSD-based, but...
I was thinking that. I wasn't going to say anything, but hey.
I love that Linux distribution, FreeBSD.
Hey, speaking of that, it was number 33 or 34 on the top 5.
So if
we had done a top 33 list, it would have made it. All right, so I guess we're moving... what are we moving on to?
We're going on to news.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
Was
that a statement
there?
Or a question? Are we flipping a coin? What do we do next?
Right.
Uh-oh. I closed something I shouldn't have.
We got a confirmation from one of our listeners that Morse code that we just heard actually does mean something.
Yes, it does.
Tech news.
That's what I thought it did.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the guy that sent it to us told us that when he sent it to us.
Yeah.
I bet he did, too. So, all right. Well, what do we got for news? All the news I created for our episode 2 weeks ago that we didn't have is all old news, so I had to throw it all out and start over.
I have no news, Mary. So whatever you've got, go with it.
Well, okay. Well, I've got a few here, but the first one, I don't know if you guys have heard this. I think it just came out, but... Linux Advocates, you know that website?
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. They've thrown in the towel.
Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people.
They were very controversial.
That was sarcasm, in case you didn't get it.
Yeah, no, I understand it because he had alienated, I think he was kind of heavy-handed in the way he moderated that
banned
site.
Banned people, it was his
banned
way or the
people.
Highway. Who needs that crap?
So it kind of bit the dust. So that was one bit of news, and I'll have a link to that story in the in my show notes, which I've already uploaded, I'm happy to say. And then another one, too. This isn't exactly news, and this really, really should have gone into what I did the last couple weeks, but I thought I didn't want to take up half the show talking about what I did. I'm going to post a link to a guide to installing and get started. She said redundantly and repetitively, with Amazon Glacier Storage. There's a kind of a doing it from the command line, and I did this at home. So it was done by professional kids.
Okay.
But I did, don't do this at home.
Don't do this at home, kids. We're professionals.
Professional screw offs is what we are. But I installed it. What you've got to do is you've got to install a few things like Git and a couple of other. Hang on, let me just tell you exactly where it is. And the instructions, they've got them both for Red Hat, CentOS, and Fedora, as well as Ubuntu Debian. So there's some Python setup tools and Python. I had all this stuff already installed, so I was pretty much good to go. And then I had to create a Glacier config file, which I set up with the appropriate information in it. And then, so from the command line, I can upload files to my Glacier vault. I created a vault. I can query the vault to see what's in it. And for any of you who are not familiar with Amazon Glacier, it's really long-term storage when you don't need fast access, because I think their response time is like 3 to 5 hours. So if you've got want to archive things off-site, it's very inexpensive. It just becomes a little more costly when you want to download stuff. But if you're trying to rescue something that you've lost, you don't care what it costs. So anyway, so I'll have a link to that in the show notes. So it's not exactly news, but I'm calling it news. So that's what it is. The other, go ahead.
That glacier storage, like, mm-hmm. say, for example, I were to use it to back my home directory up. Mm-hmm. Does it do diffs?
You would not want to back up your home directory where you're accessing and changing things frequently. In other words,
if you run like a weekly backup.
Are you running just a weekly backup?
I'm saying, like, if you run a weekly or even a monthly backup of it, does it do diffs, or does every time it upload your whole home directory?
Oh, you know, I don't know the answer to that question. I just got to the beginning, just getting it set up. Maybe part two will come up next week.
All right.
Next episode. But what was kind of cool about it is how easy you could do it from the command line with just a few little commands. And it authenticates behind the scenes.
Mary is the command line wizard now.
Oh, no, I'm not. With a tutorial by my side, I was able to get through it. But I guess the takeaway from that is if Mary can do it, you guys can do it. But it's nice if you just want to. I've got some some videos and movies and some stuff that I just want to upload and have them available in case I have a catastrophic failure, and then I know they're safe. So, and it's cheaper than.
How does the pricing on that work?
Oh, it's like a. Now, don't quote me exactly, but I think it's like around a penny a gigabyte. I mean, it's
what?
Wow.
It's nothing. It is. See, but here's the quote unquote catch. It's not really a catch. It's when uploading it to Glacier and sticking it in that vault is next to nothing. It's when you want to retrieve it. And I don't know. Oh, you know what? I think I did save hang on a second here.
That's perfect. Cause if you want to make sure everything's backed up.
Yeah. If it's just disaster recovery.
Yeah, exactly.
So you only have to pay that once. You don't have to pay it like monthly or whatever.
Yeah. And, I did take a screenshot here. The data retrieval policy is, this is from Glacier here. Only retrieve data in the free tier, blah, blah. It's free. But then max retrieval rate, if you want to retrieve, you can select your gigabytes per hour. And the max retrieval cost is $7.20 a month. I took this is weeks ago. So, I think I lost a little in the translation, but I think the bottom line is if you want some kind of long-term archival storage, this is really a cheap method to do it. So
I'm going to have a look into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The link is already in the show notes that Matt and I, we had a little problem this morning.
We had a little tiff this morning.
It was an
unintentional tiff.
Yeah.
Mary thinks I'm a bastard.
I do not. Because he pranked me, but, you know, when you prank somebody by text, the pranky part just doesn't come through, and I thought it was for real. And it looked like he had kicked me right out of editing the show notes. So then I got crabby and I texted him back because he took control and I was out. And then
but I didn't take control.
He didn't. But the screen thing I got said you did. But anyway, but it was lost in translation. But as it turned out, it was a prank. And now I thought it was very funny. So, I got a couple of other little news things before we move on. Let's see here. Go back to my little banter. Oh, yes. I'm going to post a link to, there's apparently this Linux-based gadget, and this was on linuxgizmos.com, that allows you to charge mobile phones wirelessly up to 15 feet.
I saw this device. I forget where I saw it.
I posted it on Google Plus this morning.
I saw that, but no, I saw it like a few days ago.
Oh, okay. I said, well,
it's like a device that goes on the wall.
Yeah.
You're like mounted on the wall.
Yeah, I said, now I don't have to get up off the couch to charge my phone.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then I think the only other one is that Firefox OS, you know, it seems to me that that hasn't really gotten a lot of traction yet. And I might
really?
Be.
Really? I thought it was taking the world by storm, Mary.
Well, apparently Panasonic likes it because they are going to be using it as the operating system for their smart TVs. which I will never buy. I'm never buying a smart TV.
Why?
Because.
Why?
Well,
they don't all have webcams on them that can see you.
All right. Okay, thanks, Tony. I'll get a list from you later.
Just because you like to watch TV wearing your furry suit.
Is it the webcam that you're worried about?
I don't know where that came from, but we're gonna. I'm gonna look at Tony. What, Tony?
Is it the webcam that you're worried about?
Well, it's the webcam, the microphone. I know some security researchers are so paranoid about smartphone apps that they do for the little jack for your headset microphone thing. They will pop a little plastic one in there so that it can't be automatically turned on and used as a listening device.
Ah.
So, I've got one of those at home.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not a security researcher. I'm just a paranoid geek. Anyway, all right. Well, I think that concludes my news production.
That from Mary in her tinfoil hat.
Crinkle, crinkle, little star. All right. Next.
All right. I don't know. What is next?
The news, your news. I gave mine.
My news is that I moved. And I didn't touch my laptop for almost 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. All right.
We have a studio set up right now. That was my news.
We're able to broadcast.
That's right. Hi.
I'm paying for internet for the first time in like 4 years.
Oh. You know, I wanted to compliment you on the strength of signal.
Who did you go with?
UVerse.
Yeah.
I love UVerse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was between UVerse and Comcast, and
the pricing structure, you just can't beat it on UVerse, I think.
Yeah, well, we got TV too, so it's right. with all the channels and stuff. It really came down, it came actually to the same price, but the biggest difference was Comcast said it was like 50 meg connection. But that's like there's
it's burst. A shared connection too.
Yeah, shared and burst.
So in the afternoon when kids get out of school, and then when people get home from work, your connection speed just dies until later at night when they go to bed. So,
right.
I mean, for somebody like me, it would probably be okay, because when I'm on, you're not.
No, he goes to bed at 3 a.m., remember that. So, well, good. I got a nice signal, so.
Quite snappy.
It's on the shelf right behind you.
Much snappier than the other. So,
right.
And I think I told you guys remember I had two internet connections, Comcast, and I dropped the Comcast one.
Good job.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Well, I don't need it anymore.
Oh, yeah, because you don't need the redundant connection for work anymore.
Work.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Okay.
So I guess we're going on to tooltip.
Tooltip.
Tools from the toolbox.
What you got for us, Matt?
I have. Now, some of you out there might laugh and think, why are you giving us such a simple tool tip?
Okay.
I'm
laughing already.
But it's not that simple a tool tip. I use this almost at least two or three times a day. At least. I do.
I was laughing to myself.
Okay.
I was trying to laugh silently. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And that is sort, the Linux command sort. The sort command is part of the GNU core utilities. You can find out about other core utilities by entering info core utilities at a command prompt. Okay. There's some files with sample data in it for this talk. Those files can be found at CSITTECHS.com/presentations. That's CSITTECHS.com/presentations. There's three files.
Have we started yet? No.
No.
All right, just kidding.
And it's going to be a look at this. You want to see?
I know. Oh, my gosh, Matt. There's a lot.
Okay.
Keep going.
Sort does just what the name suggests. Sorts the contents of a text file line by line. If multiple files are given, it will also merge or compress all the lines from the given files. When no files are given as an argument, it reads from standard in by default. Sort writes the results to standard out. Sort has three different modes of operation. They are sort, which is sort.
I'm shocked.
And it's a simple command, but extremely useful, which will rearrange the lines in a text file so that they are sorted numerically and alphabetically, depending on what you do with it. The default rules for sorting are: lines that start with a number will sort before lines starting with a letter. Lines starting with a letter that appears earlier in the alphabet will appear before lines starting with a letter that appears later in the alphabet. Lines starting with a lowercase letter will appear before lines starting with an uppercase letter in uppercase.
That does sound like sorting.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And
is there more?
There is the check mode instead of the sort mode. What that does is checks to see if the file is already sorted.
Oh. Wow.
And then there's the merge mode, which will merge. The files have to be already sorted. It won't sort and merge. The files have to be sorted, but then it will merge them after they're already sorted. So that, and by merge, I mean merge. Like, if this line should be before this line, that's where it goes. Do you understand what I'm saying? And all you at home listening just saw me move my hands around. Not.
No, it was the wind or the air that...
Yeah. So... And the rules for sorting can be changed according to the options you provide the sort command. Some of these are listed below. You can specify them globally or in conjunction with a specific key field. And I often use them with the key field. I almost never sort without specifying a key field because you got to know what you're sorting. In the event that no key fields are specified, any globally set options will apply to the entire line. When a key field is specified, the global options are inherited by the key fields when they have no special options of their own. In all versions of sort that are pre-POSIX, global options will only affect key fields set after the global option. To make shell scripts portable, you should specify global options first. Now, it has a lot of different options. I'm only going to talk about the five that I use the most with sort. And the first one I'm going to mention, I don't use that much, but I use it more than the ones I'm not mentioning. And it's the dash B, which means ignore leading blanks, because leading blanks can mess up your key field designators sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, if your line starts with a blank, because that's what it normally uses as a field designator, mm-hmm. that means the first field that has writing in it, the first writing you see, is actually the second field.
Oh, sure.
Because the blank that leads the line, before that blank would be field one. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there, but it's still field one. And then after that blank is field two. So if you say ignore leading blanks, you're not going to accidentally get yourself confused about what key field you want to sort. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good.
And then there's the dash K, which is the key field that you want to sort on. And that is comma separated positions. So you have K, it would be K position 1, comma position 2. Position 2 is not mandatory. This option tells sort which field or fields that consists of the part of the line between position 1 and position 2, inclusive. If position 2 is omitted, then it means from this position to the end of the line. So if you start your sorting on the third field, it will consider all the information from the third field all the way to the end of the line. But if you give it second position, like 3 and 5, it will consider all the information inclusive between positions 3 and 5.
All right.
And?
So, like, when I do this, I almost always want to sort on a field specifically. And to say sort on this field and only this field, you would do something like dash K 2, 2. So the start and end field is the same, and then it's only going to consider that field.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm right next to you.
And then there's the dash N, which means numeric sort. There's also a dash H option, which is human numeric. I almost never use that, and I don't really understand the difference. So
it might be starting with 1 instead of 0 or something like that.
Maybe. I just always use the dash N.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay.
And since GNU's sort follows POSIX standards, the dash N option no longer implies dash B. You must add the dash B to get this behavior. So,
yeah. If we go back to human for a second, numeric.
Sure.
Would that be like if things are written in like gigabyte and megabyte, then it would sort it by gigabyte is bigger than megabyte?
Oh, maybe.
Because otherwise, if you do like 100 gigabytes and 500 megabytes, then 500 is higher than 100, although it's the opposite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good call, Tony.
Thanks.
Is that it?
I'm almost never sorting.
I would think it would be.
That is probably it. I don't know. It's been a while since I've read the man or the info pages or anything. But that's probably it, because I'm almost never sorting by anything that has a designator like gigabyte, kilobyte or anything like that. I'm sorting again. When I sort, the vast majority of the time, it's an IP address I'm sorting time.
Yeah, in time. Okay.
And then R for reverse. Well, because normally if you just tell it to go ahead and sort, it's going to sort so that your biggest numbers, because again, numbers are mostly what I'm sorting, are at the bottom.
Yeah.
And some of the guys at work just let it sort that way and then don't do any kind of filtering afterwards. I like stuff to be functional, but I like it to be pretty. So I reverse sort it and then format it, apply formatting to it afterwards.
All right.
And then there's the dash T, which would tell sort to use this character instead of the default character as its delimiter, as its field delimiter.
Okay.
And I'm not reading this word for word, so if you go to our website and after the show today when Tony gets it posted, or middle of the week sometime, whenever Tony gets it posted.
That's probably more likely. This time.
And read through this. There's a lot more information that I'm just kind of skipping over. I'm trying to give you the highlights, because if I read this word for word, we'd be here till tomorrow.
I have time. I'm retired.
Yeah. And here are some examples. To sort in descending, which means reverse numeric order, from the first character of the first field and extends all the way to the end of the line, you would just say sort dash NR. And the example I have here is to do sort dash NR on Etsy underscore password underscore 1.txt. And again, that file's available at the website I said earlier. And note, for the large majority of applications, treating keys spanning more than one field as numeric will most likely not give you the results you expect. Just saying.
Okay.
I found that out the hard way when I first doing this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved into my new position at work, I would get all kinds of wacky results. I'm like, that is not what I'm trying to do. Why is it doing this?
Yeah.
It's because you have to, and that's where I got into the habit of adding that saying K2, 2. So that you're just sorting on this field. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything else in there because this is what I want to see.
Yeah.
But the whole record will sort then. In other words, if you're sorting on one second field out of 10 fields that are listed,
it'll show up in the order of that second field, depending on the other switches you use.
Okay.
Like, say you have 1 through 10. Mm-hmm. The numbers 1 through 10, but they're all jumbled up.
Mm-hmm.
And you say...
And that's only one field.
And they're all in the same column, which is a field.
Field 1. Okay.
Or field 3, or whatever field they're in.
Okay.
And then there's other information in the other fields.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying sort dash NRK 3, 3.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only taking that numeric field into account. It's going to sort 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, always.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't say that, if you just say sort NR, it's going to start at field 1, which may not even be numerical, and you may wind up with your, it's sorted alphabetically.
Okay, but the whole entire record will move along with it.
Field 3.
Okay, I got you.
Right, each record, a record is a line.
Sometimes in some of those spreadsheet programs, if you sort one column, the stuff that belongs to that will stay put. If you don't expand it.
Right.
Okay,
no.
I got you.
If you're sorting, it's mm-hmm. going to move the record with your sort column, your sort field.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, good, good.
Because each line would be a record, and each section of that record would mm-hmm. be a field.
Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense. I'm there.
And they almost all, when you're talking about this with almost all, at least the stuff I deal with, like awk is the same way. Mm-hmm. Each line is a record, and then each separate thing in that line is a field.
Okay. Hmm. I was just going to say that, Tony.
Nice.
No. Okay. So to sort alphabetically, omitting the first through the fourth fields and the blanks at the beginning of the fifth field, this starts at the first non-blank character in the fifth field. And then I have 3 and extends. I think the 3 is errant. It starts at the first non-blank character in field 5. I have 3. I don't know why. And extends to the end of each line. So that would be sort dash K5B. And then the file I used was /etc/password_1.txt. And whenever you span multiple fields with any sort, you may get results that you don't expect. So, like, on these files, on /etc/password_0.txt, which we'll use later, I'll explain these files real quick. /etc/password_1.txt is a Linux password file, but with spaces instead of colons as the delimiter.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, /etc/password_0, is a file I created, but it looks exactly like a Linux /etc/password file would look.
Okay.
Okay.
With colons as the delimiter. Okay, and then you could also sort numerically on the second field and resolve ties by sorting alphabetically on the third and fourth characters of field 5.
Wow.
Yeah, not just field 5, but you're specifying mm-hmm. go to field 5 and then move in character 3 and character 4 and use those two characters only to break ties. And you would do that.
Do you have a practical example?
I do.
I knew it. Well, thanks for ruining my little joke.
You're welcome. It would be /t:(2, 2n)-k5.3, 5.4.
Okay, that was an example. I said practical.
It is practical. And then Etsy password, if you're trying to sort your Etsy password file.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's a practical example.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Sorry, I didn't connect that.
Note that if you had written the -k2n in instead of the -K 2, 2N, Sort would have used all the characters beginning in the second field and extending to the end of the line as the primary numeric key for the large majority of applications. Treating keys spanning more than one field as numeric will not do what you expect. I can't emphasize that enough. If you span more than one field, it's not going to give you what you what you're trying to accomplish most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Also note that the end modifier was applied to the field end specifier for the first key. So it would have been equivalent to specify dash K 2N comma 2 or dash K 2N comma 2N. All modifiers except B apply to the associated field regardless of whether the modifier character is attached to the field start and or the field end part of the key specifier. Did you understand that?
No.
Okay.
No,
When you're using the specifier specifically for a field rather than globally and allowing the field key to inherit that specifier, you can put the specifier after either the first integer or after the second integer or after both integers, and they all three mean the same thing, except in the case of the dash B.
Okay, I got it now.
Okay.
Do you have it, Tony?
No.
Oh, good. But, I'm so happy.
I'll try and explain it.
Although I really have been half paying attention. I'm doing show notes at the same time. So you can continue, Matt.
All right.
I mean, conceptually, I've got it. I'd have to see it, I think, to really.
Well, download the files. Tutorial.
I'll play around with it. Okay. I mean,
Sort's a lot more powerful of a command than people give it credit for.
I hardly ever use it.
I use it at least 3 times a day.
And I can understand why you use it, just because of the nature of your job.
Got to find those brute force attacks.
Anything I ever had to sort was always in a spreadsheet. I'm sorry to say. But not anymore.
Also note that the end modifier was applied. Oh, I already talked about all that.
You should have used that as a test, Matt, to see if we were listening.
The password file on the fifth field and ignore any leading blanks. Sort lines with equal values in the field 5 on the numeric ID in field 3. Fields are separated by colon. Whatever. Sort dash T colon dash K B comma 5 dash K 3 comma 3N. And what that'll do is it sorts by the fifth field, and then, what is the matter, Mary?
Nothing. I'm listening.
All right. It sorts by the fifth field exclusively, but then after it's sorted by the fifth field, it goes back and sorts everything that was in this block, everything that was basically had the same thing in the fifth field. It then sorts that group by the third field.
Okay.
That one's pretty easy to
sort. Fifth field first, then third field.
So if you want everybody that was on a certain day, and then sort that by last name, like if it's an attendance record.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. And then sort a log file. First, by IPv4 addresses, and then second, by the timestamp. Okay? So if anybody out there has ever seen what an Apache access log looks like, I have a very small sample in the show notes right here.
Yep.
Okay? You get your IPv4 address first, and then there's a couple of blank fields, and then your date and time, and then the rest of the information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you wanted to sort it by IP addresses, so you had all of the same IP addresses together, and then sort it by the date and time, so you could see, here's my group of this IP address, and here is when it accessed this.
So you can see, like, how often, like, how many times in the last hour it hit or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Nice.
So you would do that with this one. Sort dash S dash T. Then you're telling it to use a space with the dash T. Then it's K4 comma 9N dash K4 dot 5. No, I'm sorry, dot 9M. And then K4 dot 5M. And then dash K4 dot 2N. Blah, 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 blah. What you're doing
that ended,
there.
That ended well.
What you're doing there is your
shortcut is what it's called, right?
You wanted to. what that basically is doing is saying is making sure that all of the IP addresses sort correctly, so that so that if it's .5.16, it's actually going to sort ahead of 16.2. Okay, because if you were just using the first characters, it would sort after it.
Okay.
It's a smaller number, so it should sort before. Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
So, and then you have to pipe that to a second sort to do the time.
Oh.
I'm not going to read any of that. Go to the show notes.
Now you tell us.
So, this example cannot be done with a single sort invocation since IPv4 addresses. Address components are separated by a dot, while the dates come just after a space. So it is broken down into two invocations of sort. The first sorts by the timestamp, and the second the IPv4 addresses, and it keeps it all together. And that's sort.
Thank you, Matt.
I return you to the rest of the show.
And now a word from our sponsors. Hey, you know, after our last episode, see, I have my Lions hat on.
Yes.
You and I went to that game.
Yes, we did. And it was a horrible game.
It was great. The horrible game was last week when they lost.
That
to
was
the...
a great game.
Oh, well, Matt and I had a lot of fun there.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, so anyway.
Watched some drunk guy behind us get taken out with the vomit all over himself.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's kind of that's pretty rare occurrence. I mean, well, at least in our section.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the only, he was a fool, I'll tell you. But anyway.
He was an almost unconscious fool.
Yeah,
you ever
see
somebody that drunk trying to walk? Have you ever been to the Ford Field, Tony?
No, I haven't.
The stairs are like this.
Well, it's like your typical stadium stairs where they're really, you know, they're steeply angled because you don't want people's heads in front of you. So.
They got an EMS guy below him hanging onto him. They got an EMS guy above him hanging onto him, and they're walking down the steps.
Oh,
it was horrible. And then the staff, of course, they will clean up.
Right.
Yeah, it was a mess. But anyway, yeah, so it was, so Matt and I had...
It was a good game till the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was actually kind of competitive, I guess. Yeah, anyway.
The Vikings were winning until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, okay. But I have my Lions hat on. Just wait till next season, darn it.
Yeah, Vikings are going to the Super Bowl.
All right. Yeah, all my Minnesota friends will appreciate hearing that. Okay. Well, Matt, thanks for that. You know, I never really, I doubt I'd probably use it to the extent that you are, simply because I don't really look at log files. I'll admit to that. But I can see if you've got a lot of log files to go through and you're looking for certain things, what a helpful tool that is in having that information.
And granted, I've written functions in my BashRC to do most of this work for me. But once in a while, you get some kind of a curveball thrown at you, and you have to write something on the fly on the command line. The sort, I use it all the time.
Yeah. All right. Great. What we got next?
I'm not sure. What do you think? Well,
listener feedback?
Listener feedback?
All right. I didn't know if we had any other sections we were throwing in there.
Oh, no, we don't.
Okay.
Even though you're retired now, Mary, you ain't got plenty of time.
I did give you a month. I did give you a month to get one together.
Well, I'm going on a road trip, so I had to get ready for that.
Right. No problem. All right. So, listener feedback. We had quite a few emails in the last month. Going back to our good friend Claudio, he said he did a Fedora 21 upgrade as being what he calls himself as an early adopter with updates.
Who? And what are we talking about?
Back on the 18th, 12/18, we got an email from Claudio. And he said that basically it all went well, and I figured you guys would have read that.
I talked more about it. You know, I did have it, but I think in my shuffle around, because we didn't have a show, I think I deleted it. I don't have it now.
All right. Like he said, all in all, it came out pretty good. He had an issue with upgrading his G-Potter.
Did he use Fed Up? I don't remember. Or did he?
He was pleasantly surprised to find that Fed Up went without a hitch. Even with RPM Fusion repos, the files were updated to 21, and all the apps installed were updated as well. The only issue he had was Oracle's VirtualBox repo.
Yeah, it's always so far behind. Months after it changes. Because I used to use VirtualBox. I don't anymore.
What do you use now?
Right. Nothing. I use our desktop right from my laptop and go into a Windows box on the network.
Okay.
Yeah. He said he had an issue with G-Potter because it went from the 2 version to the 3 version, and they did a back-end change with that, so it drops all your podcasts you had saved and everything.
Ooh.
So you have to, I think, yeah, I think he went on to say in another email, he said something about it didn't actually delete his old one. It ran both versions. So he had to go in and run version 2 to export it and then go to version 3 and import. And then he was all good. So yeah. And I always thought Claudio was from somewhere else.
Florida.
But yeah, he's from Florida.
Miami.
Yep.
All right. And it was Wes Spence that told us about the Morse code, which I'm pretty sure he's the one that actually sent it to us, right?
I think that could be. Maybe. I don't know. I don't have any of these emails. I must have deleted them.
I can't remember.
And we also had gotten an email from, I think it was back on Christmas, from Tom.
It was Christmas Day, yeah.
Yeah. Balance. And he had asked some questions about, you know, various backups. And that's really where that's probably when I should have talked about the Amazon Glacier. That's because his email caused me to go ahead and look into a little bit further. And that's how I got, was able to use it.
Oh, yeah. He wants some help with rsync scripts.
Or, yeah, he wanted
to switch from Spider Oak to something cheaper like Amazon Glacier.
But it's not an apples to apples comparison because Spider Oak is more on
the
fly.
Right, the little bit
syncing
I've done on
R-syncing.
It already, I don't think it would be possible to develop an rsync script to use Glacier. Maybe I'm wrong, but
no, their response time to give you your files back is 3 to 5 hours.
But you're rsyncing
pushing it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking bidirectional.
If you could mount it as a file system, then you could use rsync, or if you could connect to it through SSH.
I think SCP. I think SCP would probably be the better thing to do.
Mm.
How do you connect to it on the command line, Mary?
In the file, I had to provide which Amazon location, which is Eastern U.S., Virginia. I initially created it because I forgot to change it. I created it in Australia, my vault.
Oh, no.
And I thought, I don't want to do that. So then I changed it. So in the config file, there's a place for where you want to connect. Then you've got to provide your credentials or, you know, that public key or the key stuff.
Oh, so you've got to run some kind of proprietary app?
No. Well, I don't think I did. Well, wait a minute. There's, I had to install Python and I had to install, now I haven't, To be honest, I have not dug into the behind the scenes what exactly
it just
was
looked
done.
Like it wouldn't be rsync friendly.
What? Glacier?
Moving files.
Yeah, I just don't think that it is because it takes a while. Hang on a second, let me pull this thing up. I'm sorry, I had it open and then I closed it.
Quick Google search says Amazon Glacier for backups. And there's a Reddit thing going back and forth about using rsync.
Yeah, they said it's great for all digital archiving and backup needs where the archive files do not need to be retrieved instantly. So in this short how-to, it shows you how to install it. Now, as I said earlier, you just install, or at least from Ubuntu Debian, what I installed was Git, Python setup tools, and Python. And as I said earlier, I think those were already installed. And then you've got to clone this thing, this little file called the Amazon-Glacier. You know in England they say Glacier? Glacier.
Do you know, I don't really care how they say it in England.
All right. I'm just mentioning that. --command-interface.git. So, and then you had to, install that. So that's how it's done.
But then how do you actually connect to it? How do you actually put a file there?
Well,
did you put any files there?
Yes, I did. I did. I installed.
Okay.
I uploaded
how did
two
you
files.
Do that?
I did it from the command line. I mean, I put in, and I think there's probably a little Python script that runs and does this, but it reads. Let's see, in the Glacier command
did you
file,
do it on this laptop?
No, I did it at home on my workstation.
You have to use a Glacier command to back things up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
yes.
So the command is the application or script.
Right.
That Matt
right.
Is
right. That's what. From the little bit I looked into it, that's what it sounded like it was.
So you have
you had to invoke the Glacier command and then like
yes.
give it a file as an argument.
Yes.
And
that's exactly what I did.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was thinking that it was something different
no.
that you're asking for. And so you got to give it the keys. You give it the region, and then
that's
you identify
all the config file, so that
yes.
then you can just run it by doing Glacier and giving it
mm-hmm.
file.
That's all
yeah.
I had to do.
And you know what? I did a Google search and there's a script called Linkermental.
One of them their Google search. Well,
that's right. And there's Linkermental.
Gurgle.
Linkermental.
It's an incremental backup system using rsync for Amazon Glacier backups.
All right.
So you can
use
this script.
If you could drop that link in the show notes.
Right alongside my other one.
We'll tell.
I think I sent him a couple. I may have sent him that. I sent him that already.
Yeah.
I sent
you?
Him three links. This was one, and there were two other links. I think one of them was that.
Well,
this one here was easiest.
Just in case, let's put that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that sounds
yeah.
like just exactly
oh, we need
what
to put it in the show notes.
You can do, it's configurable. You can run either daily backups or weekly backups, and it only changes, it only sends what's changed.
So it does
it
the dip
do it.
Before it sends it.
Right. Yep.
See, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Well, this Linkermental does that.
I don't think Glacier does it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that sounds like a good way to go.
Sounds like a good way to go to me.
Sound does sound good. It's good sounding, yes. All right, so there's this email from me saying no show.
2 weeks ago.
And then there is some Google Plus activity. Matt, did you say you saw that?
Yeah. We had one response was friend of the show, Ed Lytle.
I think it is Little.
Little Lytle, Liddle. sent us his, I assume it's his first blog post on his new website. And he's using the same theme we are, which caused me some confusion when the show first started.
Same thing we used to. When we first started the show, that was the theme that we had, but we don't use that theme
anymore.
Oh,
you're right. We don't use that anymore. We've
right.
switched to a beach-style theme now. But his blog is available at liddle.us. And his first blog post, Feeling Old, Another Year Bites the Dust. And it's quite the lengthy blog post. Or no, maybe he's actually had this blog for quite some time, it looks like. Now that I see the archives go back to April of 2012. But he has just made us aware of it, so we're telling you of it. So.
So he said, so what's that? Are you, another year gone and feeling old? Hey, I got something to tell you too about being retired. You know how when you're working and Friday comes around and it's like, now Matt, maybe not for you because of your schedule, but you're always kind of pumped for Friday because it's the weekend.
No, because yeah. Then I work on my days off.
That's why I said that. Do you know that once you retire, Fridays don't have the allure anymore? It's, they don't.
It's just another day.
Yeah, it was just another day and do what I want to do land. But
do what I want to do land.
Yeah, but I'll get to that land
probably when I'm 70, so I'll look forward to it if I'm alive.
Well, it was just kind of odd. It is kind of odd. You know, it's just different. So, I mean, I was actually a little disappointed because there's usually just got kind of that little bump up, like, yeah, it's the weekend. But it was kind of interesting. So, all right, what do we got? What else we got?
That's all the mail I saw. Was there anything else that you saw, Matt?
No, because we've already talked about the only other thing we got was suggestions for the studio name, and we've already talked about that.
All right.
And I already talked about the email on the System D stuff from the BSD Now podcast guys when they responded to my query. But that was, again, 3 weeks ago, and we already talked about it.
Right. All right. Well, I guess we're coming to the end of the show. I have some music that Mary suggested for the last show was Auld Lang Syne.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if we should play that now.
No, I think not. It was appropriate then.
May old acquaintance be forgot.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Oh, what the heck was that?
Hey. That was Vocal Stylings by Matt Enders.
How about we go back?
Starting all over again. Starting all over again.
Why don't we go back to the first show that Mary was on and play that music?
All right. Sounds good.
So,
oh, man. Well, that was January
episode
what?
Episode 12.
12.
January 1st.
I was scared to death, I have to tell you.
2012.
I was afraid to talk.
And it's called Stopping the World by Of the Eye.
Stopping the World of the Eye.
By Of the Eye.
Yeah. Stopping the World is a song. And Of the Eye
is the group.
The eye.
And it's
okay.
The letter I, not yeah. Like the eyeball. Like the letter I. We'll be right back. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 142.
New studio.
That we're looking for
a
name for.
Are we supposed to have an inflection up? New studio? No, it's not, because it is a new studio. It's what is the name of our new studio?
That's right. What's the name? This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, see you next time. Je suis Charlie.
Hey, right on.